Patriots has a message for liberals and the mainstream media.
You can't handle the truth.
So, buckle up, snowflakes, because we're about to deliver the politically direct best in conservative commentary, news, and investigative reports. We're telling the truth, and we're not gonna stop. Okay, liberals, back under the bridge with the rest of your fellow trolls, and oh yeah, thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots.
They are special, special people.
On RSPRadio1.com. Welcome to Right Side Patriots on RSPRadio1.com. Craig Andreessen from the National Patriot and Diane Sorey at the Patriot Factor. Yep, it's Tuesday night. We're already into August, August 2nd, and welcome to it. Hello, Diane.
Hello, Craig. And it's funny you say we're already into August because I went into one of our local stores the other day.
Oh, no.
And they're all set up for Halloween.
Oh, God. I'm surprised they're not set up for Christmas.
I know. Well, that comes in August sometime. You know, Halloween just gets pushed to the side a bit, and you've got Halloween.
Well, whatever happened to...
I mean, you've got
Thanksgiving.
Christmas, I should say.
Whatever happened to Thanksgiving? They just skip Thanksgiving altogether?
I've noticed over the years that Thanksgiving, the only truly American holiday, seems to be relegated to the bottom of the heap.
That's a shame. That's a great holiday.
It is.
I mean, it's always on a Thursday. It's full of food and family and friends and fun and... You know, it's a food fest.
That's what I would think.
And I know people that decorate and stuff for Thanksgiving.
Me?
You, yeah. Well, the only thing you don't decorate for is my favorite holiday, Groundhog's Day.
No, I don't decorate for Groundhog's Day. Absolutely.
I'm surprised you don't put little furry stuffed rodents around the house.
Oh, God, no.
That's what I like so much about Groundhog's Day is there's nothing to do for it. You don't decorate. You don't have to buy presents. You don't have to buy cards. You don't have to dress up special. It's just a great holiday. It's the best holiday ever.
Yeah, but the groundhog is, you know, 50% right and 50% wrong.
Well, see, and we don't go by the groundhog here in Wood Lake. We have Wood Lake Wally. And
okay.
Wood Lake Wally is a raccoon that lives under the dumpster down across the road from the machine shed.
Okay.
You know, and if he crawls out from under the dumpster and sees his shadow, we've got six more weeks of winter. But you can't really trust Wood Lake Wally because he drinks.
Ah, he's a drunk.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and everybody here knows it. So, you know, we pretend like he's a big deal and he gets a kick out of it. And that's, you know.
Okay.
That's the biggest part of it.
I think something our listeners would get a kick out of is, I think you need to tell everybody what the temperature was in your neck of the woods today.
Up here in north central Nebraska in the Sand Hills, it got up to 106.
I never want to hear from anybody that Florida is the hottest place in the summer. Because I hate to tell people, we're far from it. The North, the entirety of the North is way, way hotter than Florida will ever be. We barely get above 90, 91 in the summers. Most of the time it's 89, 90, 91, and that's it. And we have the breeze, you know, the Gulf breeze, the ocean breeze, whatever. And yeah, we have humidity. But having, you know, done my little trip for the past month and been in the northern part of this country, I'll tell you, it's way, way hotter there than it will ever be here.
Well, and you've got there what you've got that I don't like. You've got mosquitoes big enough to open the door, walk in, and raid your fridge.
Yeah, we do have a lot of mosquitoes. I'm not going to say we don't. But it's nothing compared to how the North gets in the summer.
No.
It really isn't.
No, I mean, we don't have the ocean breeze. You know, this is Nebraska. Long time no see.
Right.
Folks, we got a lot to talk about tonight. Diane, you're covering A Failed Presidency Exposed.
Yes.
I'm covering The Web of Knowledge.
Okay. Well, you know I love that stuff. That's our geekdom.
That's we're going to geek out, you know, with some of that. But let's get started with quick hitters, and we've only got a couple tonight because these are a couple of big stories that are kind of breaking or have broken in the past 24 to 48 hours. Let's start with Nancy Pelosi. Nancy Pelosi landed in Taiwan earlier today, much to the consternation of China.
Yes. And what China is doing is basically flexing its muscle. They threatened to shoot down her plane and all sorts of things. And, you know, this kind of parallels what happens with Newt Gingrich back in his day. And China likes to talk a lot. However, there seems to be some kind of underlying current going on here. It's almost like China is begging to go to war with the U.S.
You noticed that, huh?
Oh, I noticed that,
well,
yes.
You know, China came out today and said they will do everything imaginable to defend themselves against Nancy Pelosi's visit to Taiwan. Now, I, you know, maybe I'm crazy, but I'm thinking, defend yourselves against what? An 82-year-old drunk old bat?
I know. It makes no sense. She's not threatening anyone. She's not doing anything. I mean, why she's even there is beyond me, but she is there, and, you know, that's the way it is. She's, like, flexing her speaker muscle. But the thing is, she's no threat to anyone.
Well, no, that's not necessarily true. While she's not a threat to China, she is a threat to the U.S.
Well, I'm talking about this trip. And I'm talking in the sense of she's not there to alienate China and that type of thing. She's basically on an economic tour of the Far East. You know, she was in, I believe it was Malaysia.
Right.
And she's going around to other countries as well. Will she accomplish anything? No.
No.
That's
no,
not
of course
the feeling.
Not.
But nothing she's doing there right now is detrimental to us. But it seems to upset China because they are so hell-bent on invading Taiwan.
Well, and, you know, much to our dismay, Diane and I, folks, we did our best to get Malaysia to keep Pelosi. They didn't want her. We've been putting the pressure on Taiwan. We're hoping they keep her, but we're not holding our breath. You know, anybody in the world that wants her can have her, as far as we're concerned. We don't want her. We don't want her here.
Right.
But, you know, when she comes back, she's going to talk about how harrowing this was and what a dangerous trip this was and what a hero she is for going there. I wouldn't be surprised if she was dodging bullets on the runway.
You know something? I can't stand Nancy Pelosi, of course. But she's not Hillary Clinton. And there is a big difference between the two of them. In my opinion, and it's my opinion alone, Hillary Clinton is a traitor to this country. There's no question about it in my mind. Nancy Pelosi is not a traitor per se. We don't like her policies. We don't like what she stands for. But I don't believe she's a traitor on the, let's say, on the lines of Hillary and even Obama.
Yeah, I guess I would tend to agree with you in that assessment. But it doesn't mean I like her.
No, I don't like her at all. I can't stand her.
You know,
and she's there now. She's, you know, landed already, I assume, you know, the time difference, all that.
Yep.
And in fact, China has now summoned the U.S. ambassador to Beijing over Pelosi's visit.
For what?
Really? This little 86-year-old Botoxed woman is a threat to China?
Look, that's not the only thing China is doing in retaliation for the wombat's visit, right? Mm-hmm. China has suspended importation of Taiwanese fish products and other snacks.
Yes.
Now, I'm looking at this thing, and this is so bizarre. China has suspended imports from Taiwanese companies producing pastries, baked goods, and sweets in what appears to be a retaliatory policy meant to put pressure on Taiwan. So if this breaks out into World War III, it will be the first time a war has been fought over donuts.
Oh, cute. Cute, cute. Well, you know, there's a little backstory to all of this. What people don't know, Nancy Pelosi, back in 1991, 2 years, remember, after those protests in Beijing that were crushed by the Chinese government, she went to Tiananmen Square and displayed a banner honoring those who were killed, the deceased protesters. Now, the Chinese government has never held back their disdain for Pelosi because of her support for the protesters. Remember, even a broken clock is right twice a day. So when you add that to the fact that China sees Taiwan as a self-governing breakaway province, they've not ruled out force to unify it, and they might see Pelosi as the sort of conduit for America saying, you're not going to go by force and take back Taiwan. Especially, reports out of Taiwan now show that young people are arming up.
Right. Right, because, I mean, it's not that Pelosi's there, it's that they don't want China there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now if you ask the Chinese officials, the Chinese government, the CCP, they will tell you that the Taiwanese people want to be a part of China. No, they don't.
No, they don't. They're very westernized and they don't want to be part of it. They have their freedoms and they'd like to keep their freedoms. But on this, Pelosi has shown a record of opposing the Chinese. And like I said, it started with Tiananmen Square. She did stand up for the protesters. Yeah, she's a good example of a broken clock. But I can understand China not wanting her there because of that. But I can't understand China being afraid of her there.
I don't think
it's
they are.
Things.
I don't really think they're afraid. I think they're just making noise, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. The bottom line is I think they're making noise. They're just, you know, threatening, trying to flex muscle. But at the bottom line, there's an inkling suspicion. Remember, China is aligned with Russia. Russia is failing in Ukraine. What better way for them to save face, meaning Russia? Let China start a war. Take everybody off Ukraine and let's focus on the Chinese.
Well, now it's
a vicious cycle.
Yeah, but it's not just the Chinese that she's pissing off. She's also pissed off Russia with this trip.
Well, that's a good thing.
Yeah, Dmitry Peskov, he's the press secretary to Vladimir Putin. He says, we can now state unequivocally whether she makes it there or not. Everything about this tour and possible visit to Taiwan has provocative character. Russia is absolutely in solidarity with China.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, of course they are. I mean, that goes without saying. Of course they are. China, I mean, Russia has very few friends left in the world. I think their main friends that are left are North Korea, China, Iran.
Iran.
And Syria.
Yeah, that's about it.
That's about it right now, as far as their reputation in the world. Even the UN, the useless nations, is turning against Russia over Ukraine. So I can see these people all ganging up, and Nancy Pelosi would just become a conduit by which to start more trouble that would allow Putin to do what he wants to do in Ukraine.
Well, you know, Biden was very against Pelosi going, not so much because it would cause a war, but because I think he's afraid that China will let loose the secrets on Hunter Biden.
That could very well be. And when you say Biden is against him going to China, there's one thing that everybody needs to remember. Biden's not calling the shots. Obama is calling the shots. Obama doesn't want a confrontation with China.
No, but Joe doesn't want all the dirty laundry that China right. has on him, on his brother Jim, and on Hunter Biden to be made public. So
eventually, I think that thing is going to come out.
I do,
anyway.
Too. Yeah, I do, too. But mm-hmm. for now, the Wicked Witch of the West Coast is sitting in Taiwan.
Yep. I wonder, I hope she's enjoying Chinese food.
Yep. I guess if you're going to get takeout, that's the place to go.
Right.
The other quick hitter we want to talk about is the drone strike that took place in Kabul, Afghanistan, against al-Zawahiri. And that mm-hmm. took place on Sunday and killed the al-Qaeda leader. It's interesting to me, and I know you feel the same way, the reaction from Joe Biden to that strike.
It's a typical case of talking out of both sides of your mouth or two-facedness, whichever you want to choose. Because if you remember, when President Trump took out the General Soleimani, Joe Biden was right in there with all the Democrat candidates and the media chastising President Trump for an assassination. And yet we're supposed to herald that he has now done the same thing?
Well, he thinks so.
Well, he doesn't think so. Obama thinks so.
Well, and, you know, he's doing a victory lap. He's spiking the football, whatever you want to call it, you know, and oh, look what I did, puffing up his chest. Look what I did. I took out al-Zawahiri, you know, and look, al-Zawahiri was the co-conspirator for 9/11, mm-hmm. and he had a role in the bombing of the embassies, or not the embassies, but the coal ship bombing, mm-hmm. and also the barracks bombings in North Africa. And, you know, I mean, he was definitely a bad guy, and he needed to go. But, you know, we haven't really heard much from him in quite a while.
No, it was reported on some sites. I don't have verification that he was sick. Remember,
he was an old geezer.
They don't get the best health care over there. But it's very interesting.
Wait a minute. Al-Qaeda doesn't have Obamacare?
No.
You would think.
Well, they probably do when you think about it.
You would think.
But I have an interesting quote here. When they were all on the campaign trail and President Trump wisely took out Soleimani, recordings were made of a byline from a reporter, and they said, for the Democrats running for president, the killing of Soleimani offers a clear example of the risk of having Donald Trump as commander-in-chief. Now, former Vice President Joe Biden spoke at a campaign event in Davenport, and this is what he said. The fact is, I don't think Trump has any idea what he's dealing with. And he went on to say, does anybody here think Trump has any notion of what the next step is? In other words, he was criticizing the man who was president, not knowing what he was doing by taking out one of the world's worst killers. Well, in fact, Biden then went on to say, no, I really mean it. He doesn't know what he's doing. I really never thought, as someone who has spent his whole life involved in national security and foreign policy, talking about himself here, friends, I never thought that I'd see something quite like this. I really mean it. In other words, the Democrats and the candidates who were running for the nomination, and Vice President Joe Biden was at that time, were actually criticizing the killing of one of the world's most dangerous men. But when he did it, and I don't believe that he ordered the assassination. I mean, he can't order, you know, even lunch on a menu. I think it was Obama who ordered it, but that's my opinion alone. That's okay if it's done under the Biden administration, but it's not okay when it was done under the Trump administration.
Well, and let's not forget, Joe Biden was against taking out Osama bin Laden.
Exactly.
He's on record as telling Obama not to do it.
Yeah, because he wanted to capture him alive. That was probably one of the correct things he would have done, because I would have loved to have seen bin Laden brought back here and let the families of those killed in a room with him. I would have loved to seen him ripped limb from limb.
Well, you know, I mean, yesterday Biden came out and said that the killing of al-Zawahiri will bring closure to the 3,000 people's families who died on 9/11. No, it won't. Okay.
Utter rubbish.
There is no closure for that kind of thing.
No.
All right. But, I mean, those families are going to live with that forever.
Absolutely. It's going to become part of their family history that they never wanted, that no one ever wanted.
You know,
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, not only the 3,000 that died that day, but all the people that have died since that were involved in cleaning up the rubble,
right.
and the people that have become disabled because of that, those people are going to live with that forever. Their families are going to live with that forever. There is no closure to this.
No. The killing of two does not make up for the killing of over 3,000 Americans. Like I said, I would have loved to have seen both of them brought back here, placed on trial, locked in a room, and let the victims' families go in and do what they will.
I'll tell you what, I understand what you're saying. You know, in that regard, but I'm glad that it went down the way it went down for both of them. And the reason is because you bring them back over here and put them on trial, some goofy-ass judge, a liberal activist judge, is going to let them out.
No. Remember, the ones that we've captured that have been involved in the other bombings and stuff, they've always been shipped to Gitmo.
How many people from Gitmo
let out?
How many people that were encapsulated in Gitmo have been returned to the battlefield?
They've been returned later on. But when you're talking about Bin Laden and al-Zawahiri, you're not talking about your average terrorist here.
I understand that, but I don't trust the system when it comes to Gitmo, because none of those people should have been let out. None of them.
I agree.
You know, and I'm just glad they're dead, you know. But look, this doesn't end it, and don't anybody think it does, because al-Qaeda will just pick somebody else.
Not only that, they're martyrs now. They've right. reached martyr status for these loonies, you know, and it's not going to stop with their deaths.
No, and al-Qaeda and the Taliban are great friends, so go figure.
Yeah, and that's another bad thing of why this was done the way it was done, because if you remember when Biden said we're withdrawing from Afghanistan, he said Afghanistan is free of al-Qaeda. Afghanistan is not free of al-Qaeda. They are roaming free, and they have taken over most of the government.
I mean, the Taliban is their kind of enforcement arm.
Right.
You know, local enforcement arm, but al-Qaeda is running the show in Kabul.
Yes.
And everybody knows it.
Yes. But Biden said, no, there's no al-Qaeda left in Afghanistan.
Right. Baghdad Bob.
Yeah.
You know. But al-Zawahiri is gone, and he's a little grease spot. He was apparently sitting on a balcony of an abandoned building, what they called a safe house, mm-hmm. in downtown Kabul, when the drone let loose two projectiles and took him out. Apparently, there were other people in the building, and none of them were killed, only al-Zawahiri.
Yeah. And, well, one thing, and it's something that you and I do disagree on, okay, this man, yes, absolutely take him out. I don't care if they blew him into a million pieces. But here it is, Joe Biden is at his lowest levels, approval-wise ever. Kamala Harris is even lower than him. Our economy is in a disastrous state. Recession is happening. Right. Depression always looms, you know, as a possibility. And suddenly, Biden comes out to announce we got one of the world's most wanted men on R&I Wonderful. So what was done now at the time it was done has taken the eye off of our economy.
I don't think so.
Right. I said we disagree with it. I said we disagree with it. I wholeheartedly agree with the taking out of him, but the timing to me is just a little too coincidental.
You know, if you got the target, if you got a green light, you take the shot, and that's kind of what happened. I look, people are going to vote in less than 100 days now based mm-hmm. on the economy. They're not going to vote based on al-Zawahiri.
No, they're not.
Most people in this country didn't even know the name al-Zawahiri. They've forgotten al-Zawahiri. We haven't heard anything from al-Zawahiri in years and years and years. You know, it doesn't make him any less dangerous, but, you know, they're not going to base their votes on that. They're going to base their votes on what's hitting their bank accounts and their wallets, and that's the economy.
Oh, I agree with you.
Yeah.
I agree with you 100%, but no matter what, timing is a little suspicious because they have had him in their sights before.
Well, they got a clean shot. They took it. I'm glad he's gone. Look, we've made it to the bottom of the hour here. That means the end of the segment. But we've got a couple of great segments coming up. We hope you stick around for them. About a half an hour from now, I'm going to be talking about the web of knowledge. But when we get back, Diane's got it with a failed presidency exposed. Stay with us, folks. There's plenty more Right Side Patriots coming up after this.
You're listening to Right Side Patriots Radio, the best in conservative commentary, news, and talk, where we do away with the politically correct nonsense and give you the politically direct truth. This is the home of Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern with Craig Andreessen and Diane Sorey. We're working to make this country great again from the right and leaving puddles of melted snowflakes on the left. Thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots, your best bet on the internet.
You're listening to RSPRadio1.com.
Hi guys, Diane Sorey from The Patriot Factor on thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com, where I found a home base 7 years ago after becoming one of Facebook's longtime Facebook felons, or so I've been told by the Facebook gods. On my blog, you will find not only my articles, but our Right Side Patriots investigative reports, as well as stories and links to and from well-known writers and bloggers, plus what I call almost daily memes, my snarky take on news of the day. And for more great takes on the issues of the day, check out The National Patriot at thenationalpatriot.com, where you can read Craig's insight into all the current news happenings. And join us both on Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. EST at RSPRadio1.com.
Welcome back to Right Side Patriots on RSPRadio1.com. Craig Andreessen from The National Patriot, Diane Sorey at The Patriot Factor, getting you through a Tuesday night edition of the show. If you miss any part of it, just go to RSPRadio1.com tomorrow morning, click on the podcast button, become one of the pod people. We love you pod people out there. Thank you.
Yes, we do.
All right, Diane, so you have decided to take on just a wee little topic, a failed presidency exposed.
Yes, and let's start with this. 3.5 weeks of escapism goes by way too quickly, especially when it's your older son's destination wedding / vacation. But now it's time for me to get back to the real world and once again face the fact that the Democrats and their media cohorts, the very party and its propaganda arm, who still refuse to acknowledge the differences between a man and a woman, continues on with the same old tired distractions from before I left. And it's all in a misguided yet ever so divisive attempt to divert our attention away from the undeniable fact that Joe Biden's presidency, his objectives, his policies, and his agenda remains a total disaster, something we must focus on as the midterm election draws near. And said disaster encompasses both domestic and foreign policy issues. First, Biden's domestic disasters see soaring gas prices blatantly being manipulated to fall back down as the midterm election draws near, while he ignores the basic principle of supply and demand. And the now 40-year high in across-the-board inflation shows no sign of abating anytime soon. Couple that with continuing supply chain shortages. In fact, baby formula supplies are reported to be worse off now than they were 4 months ago. And sadly, recession has become the new reality as the GDP fell another 0.9% in the second quarter of this year, leaving one to easily see how our economy under Joe Biden is simply, to put it mildly, a mess. But how could it not be when the ongoing crisis at our southern border is helping to drain our government's monetary coffers, what with almost 2 million folks with their hands out for the Democrats' promised free stuff, having crossed our border illegally last year alone, with almost that many crossing this year to date as I was writing this. And yet DHS Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas still claims that the border is highly secure and, quote, getting secure by the day, while Border Patrol agents themselves state that, quote, hundreds of thousands crossing every month is not the definition of secure, and that, quote, they are liars and anyone who believes them are fools. Could not have said it any better myself. And, Craig, surely not to be forgotten are the issues of domestic terrorism and supposed insurrection lurking not so silently in the background. And while insurrection coupled with domestic terrorism truly does come in the guise of government-hating, America-defaming groups like Antifa and BLM, remember as fact that neither group has yet to be called to task for the rioting, looting, mayhem, murder, and the burning of American cities, all done in their name, let alone their outright government subversive agenda, true insurrection that's willingly overlooked by their Democrat naysayers.
Well, you know, I mean, Antifa, BLM, yeah. I mean, insurrection, I mean, it's got all the hallmarks of that, but they ignore that because they can deflect from it by talking about the sequel to the sequel. And I think you know what I mean.
Yes. And yet we only hear the word insurrection in regards to the Trump impeachment hearings part three, otherwise known as the, quote, unfair and unbalanced televised House January 6th hearings. And really, how can the word insurrection even be bantered about in regards to January 6th when no one who was arrested or tried to date has had the charge of insurrection being levied against them? Especially when many who were present claimed that the Capitol Police quite willingly opened the Capitol doors to let the protesters in. Also on Biden's failed domestic front, we continue to see the crime figure soaring as America's streets are turning red with the blood of innocent victims, what with the police still being ordered to stand down. And while some in the political arena are now calling for a refunding of the police, their voices are being drowned out by those whose hatred of the police still runs as deep as the color of their skin. It's no wonder why we need the Second Amendment now more than ever before. After all, we need a means by which to defend ourselves and our families, because if the police can't or won't do it, we must do it ourselves. And with the rise in gun violence, coupled with the federal government acting more like the Gestapo incarnate, perpetrators of crimes are turned into heroes or victims, while crime's true victims are barely given any lip service at all. And here let's separate gun violence into two categories, with the first being when a firearm is used in the process of committing a crime, like robbery, for example. From that, what's now referred to as mass shootings, where killing is done for killing's sake alone. To try and take firearms away from both petty criminals and we law-abiding citizens, while not addressing the mental issues of those who commit mass shootings, does no good at all. For firearms, for guns, will not only always be gotten by those hell-bent on doing bodily harm, but those of us behind every blade of grass will not, nor must not, give up our firearms willingly, for to do so will lead directly to the downfall of American freedoms. Remember, Craig, it's only those of unsound mind who commit mass shootings, and besides, guns themselves do not kill people. People knowingly and willingly kill people. Gun-free zones be damned.
Well, and then we've always got what now seems to be ever-present pandemic manufactured panics to worry about. We've been through 2 years of one, and isn't there a new one emerging?
Yeah. And lastly, on the domestic front, for this article and for this show anyway, we continue seeing both abortion and COVID on the front pages. So while Democrats are up in arms, pun intended, over the fact that their sanctioned killing of babies in the womb has been dealt a not unexpected blow by the SCOTUS's overturning of Roe v. Wade, COVID fear-mongering lingers on as Joe Biden, the man who just a year ago said, quote, "You're not going to get COVID if you get the shots," has, as I write this, COVID himself. Quite telling, I'd say, as our bodies, ourselves, in liberal speak, matters only when the killing of unborn babies is involved. While the willingly unjabbed, like me, still remain healthy and COVID-free. Now, as if on cue, enter monkeypox, the newest disease du jour, what with COVID scare tactics starting to wane. And as for Biden's ongoing foreign policy disasters, of which I will highlight but a few, we must start with his foolishly ordered unilateral Afghanistan withdrawal that never should have been, most especially under what was then the current circumstances that presented in the country. Seeing the Taliban now winning the war that we should never have lost left our troops returning home to find that it was more important for our military to become woke than anything else. What a sad commentary our men and women in uniform were now forced to face. But Biden's leaving behind the millions of dollars of military equipment in what was a hastily conceived exit, an exit where the enemy dictated the timeline, led not only to a still ongoing humanitarian crisis, escalating starvation, and Afghanistan's general economic collapse, but to our arms being used against the very people we once proudly helped free. And not only does the media give little lip service to this, but this only compounds the damage already done by Obama's hearts and minds directives, proving, Craig, that Joe Biden is anything but a true commander-in-chief, let alone one who is respected by both the military and we civilians alike.
Well, how about his trip to the Middle East, this recent trip that he just got back from to the Middle East, where he pretty much gave the double finger salute to Israel in order to cuddle up to the Iranians. But that wasn't all there was to it, right?
Right. Like Craig said, Biden's recent trip to Israel, the Palestinian territories, and Saudi Arabia, where in Israel he stated that he and his administration, quote, won't wait forever to get back into the nuclear deal, end quote. In trying to placate Iran, Biden not only stabbed Israel in the back, but the self-called messenger of peace spoke out of both sides of his mouth when announcing America's, quote, firm support for Israel and that we would, quote, ensure Israel's military security if Iran did obtain nuclear weapons. Empty words spoken, for Biden then met with Palestinian leaders and announced a new $235 million aid package for the Palestinians, the very folks aligned with, financed by, and who received the bulk of their weapons courtesy of Iran. And to add insult to injury, Biden repeated his support for a two-state solution, ignoring the fact that the so-called Palestinians already have a homeland. It's called Jordan. Proving that all Biden did while in Israel was to again channel his inner Obama. Then it was on to Saudi Arabia to beg the Saudis to produce more oil. Unfortunately, the highlight of Biden's trip to Riyadh was a disrespectful fist pump with Saudi Prince and future King Mohammed bin Salman Al Saud, who in effect is already Saudi Arabia's leader. And while no serious one-on-one oil negotiations took place between the two men, Biden did promise with fingers crossed behind his back, no doubt, to, quote, reconsider the decision to ban the sale of offensive armaments to Saudi Arabia. And no, this most likely will not happen. What with Saudi Arabia now forging relationships with Israel as they share and must keep in check their common enemy, Iran. Simply, Biden's attempt to cozy up to the Saudis has proven to be an embarrassment for our country, as it has done nothing to ease, let alone undo, Biden and the Democrats' self-inflicted energy crisis. And also not to be forgotten is Ukraine, a still ongoing foreign policy disaster for Joe Biden. What with the sum total of promised U.S. aid in regards to much needed equipment still not reaching Ukrainian hands out of fear of Russian reprisal. So while Zelensky and his loyalists continue their fight against Putin's forces, Biden shows weakness in not only his fear, but in his lackadaisical attitude towards Vladimir Zelensky himself, a man who has more courage in his little pinky than Biden has in his whole body. But Craig, then again, Ukraine is a sore point for both the big guy and his son Hunter, and blood always proves thicker than water. Blankets, anyone?
You know, you can't really talk about the failed presidency of Joe Biden unless you bring up one topic that it drives me absolutely out of my mind, and that's the fact that monkeypox is caused by climate change.
Right. And with that, lastly, dare I not mention the misnomer known as Biden's climate change agenda, which in reality is but the weather. Remember, recorded human history itself has shown that the seasons run and will continue to run in cycles, with summers always being hot, while winters will always be cold. After all, Mother Nature herself cannot ever be changed. And why do I now list climate change as a Biden foreign, not domestic policy disaster? Because what is now called climate change, remember it was first called global warming, then global cooling, is a key part of the globalist green energy agenda. And not only does Biden's green energy policies signal trouble here at home, both cost and common sense wise, but they do so on a global scale as well, for failures here at home do tend to echo worldwide. And Biden's only success, if you can call it that, in all these aforementioned disasters is that he has allowed himself to become the willing puppet by which the left, by which Obama himself, can still openly try to destroy our beloved America. And Biden is oblivious to it all. After all, fools rarely know they are fools, for the spotlight blinds them to the truth. And so reality continues on, as my escapism and vacation time is now sadly over.
Well, welcome back to the real world.
Yeah.
You know?
I know. And nothing's changed.
No, it's just a furtherance of the debacle known as the Biden presidency.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, when you look at, and you said it early in the segment, you're just scratching the surface here.
Right.
You know, I mean, if you really wanted to go in depth.
Our articles and our segments are held to word and time constraints.
Yeah.
I mean, basically, a whole entire investigative report or even a fact paper can be done on Biden, but we can't do that in the time constraints and word constraints we're limited to.
Well, you know, not so long ago, a month and a half maybe ago, you know, Biden was out there trying to show off to reporters how you know, vital he is and how, uh-huh, you know, what in great shape he is, and he fell off his bicycle in front of a whole group of photographers.
Of course.
You know?
Of course.
I mean, you know, you don't even get into that aspect of it. You don't even get into the aspect that, you know, he doesn't know what day it is, much less what time it is, until somebody tells him it's time for his pudding. you know?
Well, I already have done a piece on why I believe he's medically and mentally unfit to hold the office of president. In this article, I just wanted to focus on the tangible policies.
Well, and I'll tell you, one of the tangible things, and like we said, there's no way to get into all of this in a single segment, in a single article,
right. Okay?
But one of the most tangible things is this upcoming midterm election in November. Not one single person running on the Democrat ticket wants Biden campaigning for them. Not one.
I know, that's a sad commentary. And the only problem is, now, polls came out today that said if it was a matchup between Trump and Biden, barring any, you know, tampering again, folks, and Dominion machines and
right. Miscounts
and mail-in fraud and all that, Trump would win by about 7-8 points, and even more so if Kamala Harris were to run. But the problem is, who do the Democrats really have that's better?
Well, they don't have anybody.
Any good candidates. That's the problem. You know, I once thought maybe Joe Manchin, you know,
No. Before
he pulled this stunt that he pulled this week as far as that ridiculous spending bill, I thought maybe he would be a feasible Democrat candidate. But now, who do they have? Buttigieg?
Well, the best they've got, okay, and this is a sad commentary, the best they've got is Gavin Newsom out in California, and you could write a whole op-ed and do a whole segment on what a disaster he is as a governor.
Exactly. I mean, he, in fact, today or late last night, declared a national emergency in California. And guess why?
Monkeypox.
They have a few isolated cases amongst gay men. Monkeypox right now is mostly in the gay men community. Not entirely, but mostly. But because a few in California seem to have it, there's a state of emergency that he has called. This is who is running.
He's the best they've got.
Who are you going to bring out of the woods from the Democrats? Are you going to bring Julian Castro again?
No. I mean, he's nowhere near ready for prime time.
No. You're going to bring, you know, the old battle axe Hillary? You know, she'll have to put her liquor down. Or you're going to bring in Michelle Obama?
It's what I'm saying. Gavin Newsom is the best they've got. And he sucks. I mean,
yeah. You
know. And, I mean, talk about Biden disasters. How about Kamala Harris? She's a disaster.
She's polling lower than Joe Biden, if you can believe that. Joe Biden is at 31 and she's in the 20s.
You know, she's the only thing keeping somebody from slipping Biden some bad pudding.
Yeah.
You know, the list of disasters with this administration just goes on and on and on. You know, you talk about the inflation. Well, you know, that's just the tip of the economic iceberg. You know, when you look at this new spending bill, you know, the Inflation Reduction Act, right? You know, it's a giant spending bill. It's going to increase inflation, and everybody knows it. Although the media and the Biden administration, they don't admit to that, but it's true. You know, that's a disaster in the making. I mean, the list just goes on and on and on.
Yeah, and people are starting to see it here. There's a number of Democrats, according to certain reports, apparently over 1 million have already switched parties.
Right.
Whether that's true or not, I don't know. But there are reports coming that he has lost Hispanic votes, that he has lost Black votes, that he has lost Asian votes. Is any of this true, or is this disinformation? I don't know.
I guarantee you.
Because we can't get truth. We can't get truth out of the media.
I guarantee you it's true. And not next week, but the week after, I'm putting together an article about that very topic.
About disinformation?
No, about the left bleeding voting blocks. They're hemorrhaging.
Oh, okay, good.
You know, and I've got the numbers and everything to back it up. So I've been working on that in the last day or two.
Okay.
You know, so
okay. I'm just getting done with next Tuesdays.
You know, so I mean, I'm just putting it together. There's a lot of numbers to sort through. So it's going to take me a mm-hmm. while. So it won't be for next Tuesday, but it'll be for the week after.
Okay. That's
so
good.
The title on your op-ed, A Failed Presidency Exposed, folks, you can find it in two different places. You can go to thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com, get the link, read the op-ed there, or you can go to rspradio1.com and get the link and read it there. And either way you go, we hope you share the link so that people know what's going on. And remember, this is just the tip of the iceberg. This is an overview, if you will, not a summary. So,
right.
There's right. plenty more disasters to go. I guarantee you, we haven't seen the last of it.
No, I'm sure.
You know, so it'll be interesting as the clock ticks down to November 8th of this year, followed quickly, I'm sure, by announcements as to who's actually going to be running in 2024, and then it's game on. So,
right. And that's fine.
Yep. We'll wait and see what comes of all that. Folks, we've made it to the top of the hour. I know we're a couple of minutes early, but bear with us. We're going to take a quick break, get a couple of station IDs in, and then when we come back, we're talking about the web of knowledge. So stay with us. There's more Right Side Patriots after this.
Hi, guys. Diane Sori from The Patriot Factor on thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com, where I found a home base 7 years ago after becoming one of Facebook's longtime Facebook felons, or so I've been told by the Facebook gods. On my blog, you will find not only my articles, but our Right Side Patriots investigative reports, as well as stories and links to and from well-known writers and bloggers, plus what I call almost daily memes, my snarky take on news of the day. And for more great takes on the issues of the day, check out The National Patriot at thenationalpatriot.com, where you can read Craig's insight into all the current news happenings. And join us both on Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. EST at rspradio1.com.
You're listening to Right Side Patriots Radio, the best in conservative commentary, news, and talk, where we do away with the politically correct nonsense and give you the politically direct truth. This is the home of Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern with Craig Andreessen and Diane Sori. We're working to make this country great again from the right and leaving puddles of melted snowflakes on the left. Thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots, your best bet on the internet.
You're listening to RSPRadio1.com.
Welcome back to Right Side Patriots on RSPRadio1.com. If you miss any part of the show, you can always go to rspradio1.com tomorrow morning, click on the podcast button, and there we shall be.
Okay. Yes, we shall be.
All right, so we got one segment left tonight, and we're going to get into something that Diane and I have been geeking out about for the last couple of weeks. Okay.
Oh, yes.
The Web of Knowledge. You know, back in 1990, the Hubble Space Telescope was launched. And after being fitted with glasses due to a rather unfortunate mix-up between standard and metric measurements, we started seeing things that simply astounded us. We saw the cosmos with a clarity never before imagined. Hubble has done more to enhance our knowledge and understanding of the universe since 1990 than Galileo has done since 1609. The images that we have gazed upon with rightful wonder, thanks to Hubble, have been magnificent, awe-inspiring, and breathtaking. Among other things, Hubble has helped us pin down the age of the universe, now known to be 13.8 billion years, roughly three times the age of Earth. Because of Hubble, we've discovered two moons of Pluto, Nix and Hydra. Hubble has helped determine the rate at which the universe is expanding, discovered that nearly every major galaxy is anchored by a black hole at the center, and created a 3D map of dark matter. Hubble has found exoplanets and helped determine their composition. Hubble let us watch a comet slam into Jupiter. They found water vapor erupting from the surface of Jupiter's moon Europa, and for the very first time, the effect of gravitational lensing on a distant exploding star was seen. Over the past 32 years, Hubble has made some 1.3 million scientific observations and returned to us some 1 million photographic images. Now, there's a new telescope in space, the James Webb Telescope, and it's bigger, better, and further away than any orbiting observation platform ever created. Galileo would be astounded. The Webb Telescope is parked 1 million miles away from Earth with an array of mirrors that dwarfs Hubble and a package of scientific instruments and capabilities that literally would put Hubble to shame if Hubble had any reason to be ashamed, which it doesn't. Webb is massive and has a five-layer heat shield the size of a tennis court to keep it protected from the blistering heat of the sun. Webb is large enough to cover an area 15 times the size of what Hubble can handle, with stunningly better spatial resolution than is available from any other telescope. The near-infrared camera, the near-infrared spectrograph, the near-infrared imager, and slitless spectrograph, and of course the mid-infrared instruments on the Webb telescope, Diane can look back further in time and in space with such precision and detail that we will be able to learn the chemical makeup of distant exoplanets to see if any of them might sustain life, and we'll be able to learn about our universe all the way back to just a few million years after the Big Bang.
To me, that is absolutely fascinating because, you know, you look up at the sky, or I should say into the night sky with all the stars, there's no end in sight. It just goes on and on and on and on. But when you have a telescope like the Webb, and who knows what's going to come after the Webb, can you just imagine it actually seeing the beginning of time?
You know, it's already come close, and I'll get to that here in just a little bit. You know, look, just a couple of weeks ago, the first full-color images from the James Webb Telescope were released to the public, and they are staggering. What astounded us from Hubble now blows our minds from Webb. Now, in the blog post on my website, thenationalpatriot.com, I've included a bunch of photos. And the first image that I have in here is from the Hubble, and it's an image of the Carina Nebula. It is outstanding. But Right below it, I've got the Carina Nebula as seen by the James Webb Telescope. And it's mind-blowing. Mm-hmm. I mean, the compare and contrast between the two is mind-blowing. Now, if you look really closely at the Carina Nebula as photographed from the Webb Telescope, you will see something that is a mind-blowing micro image in a mind-blowing vision.
Right.
It's a reasonably new star by cosmic standards, but it's doing something rather impressive. It's moving through the nebula like a comet. That star is traveling at a high velocity, and in its wake, it's leaving a tail millions upon millions of light years long. Now, we couldn't even see it with Hubble, and yet there it is in the Webb image. The Webb telescope is knowledge. Thousands of people well above my pay grade are going to spend decades learning from the Webb telescope, and they're already learning things we either never knew or only knew in theory. They're looking back in time, billions of years back in time, and many more billions of light years into the past of our universe. They will gain knowledge that will further our understanding of the universe, and they will learn more about our place in it. A couple of weeks ago, I posted a Facebook image, a couple of the first Webb images, and among them were comments from a fellow named Matthew Edward Hayward. He said, quote, "Pretty cool, but was it worth the expense?" unquote. Diane Matthew believes that funding NASA and the $10 billion spent over the past 20 years on building the James Webb Telescope is a waste of money. So let me put it this way. The cost of furthering our understanding of the universe and our own solar system, in the case of the Webb Telescope, is $10 billion. The price of remaining ignorant is free. To those seeking knowledge, yes, it's worth the expense. But to those who would rather be blissfully ignorant, they're left to ask questions like, was it worth the expense?
Well, you have to understand, people like this Matthew Hayward, they think the entire space program is useless, that it has no ramifications here on Earth. And what they don't understand is, if it wasn't for NASA, there were certain things that we take for granted here on Earth that wouldn't be. And I've written articles about this in the past.
Right.
Take simple things like Velcro. That came from NASA. Cell phones came from NASA. MRIs came from NASA. People don't understand. You can't stop knowledge. We have to keep learning, or we will basically cease to exist.
You know, just like your segment tonight, Diane, you could have done hours and hours on on the topic. I could do hours and hours on this. But Matthew proceeded to go to the typical fallback line of thought, always taken by those who don't like spending money on things they can't understand. He said, quote, "How many lives could have been saved with that money? I'll bet if you talk to family members of those who died from starvation or lack of medical treatment due to finances, would disagree with you. Personally, I'm opposed to spending money we don't have, no matter what it's being spent on." Unquote. Now, that line of thought is a head-scratcher. How many lives could have been saved by spending money we don't have on something Matthew thinks would be a better way to spend the money? In other words, Matthew is against spending money we don't have unless we spend it on what he wants to spend it on. Mm-hmm. How many lives could have been saved with the $10 billion spent on the Webb telescope? Well, there's no way to quantify any answer to such a question, which is why it's always the fallback question asked by those who have no desire to seek knowledge. The contributions from our space program to everyday life can sometimes not be measured immediately upon paying for them. For instance, did you know that NASA's digital signal technology originally used to recreate images from the moon during the Apollo missions is the underlying technology that makes CAT scans and MRIs possible? The pyrotechnic mechanism that was used to detach the space shuttle from its rocket boosters after launch is the same used in life shears, but only in a smaller scale. Life shears are the tool that can be used in emergency situations to cut into cars or cut into collapsed buildings to rescue people that are trapped inside them. Matthew mentioned starvation. Well, the ability to cook food on long space missions is no longer impossible with the invention of 3D food printers. That technology is now being refined for commercial use in the production of chocolates and other confections, as well as to create nutritious foods for diabetics and others with specific dietary needs. In the sealed artificial environment of a spacecraft, attempts to grow plants have led to ethylene buildup. NASA invented an air purifier for the International Space Station that's now used widely here on Earth, everywhere from restaurants to hospitals to refrigerators, to remove ethylene, which hastens decay, as well as other particulates and pathogens. Now, here's some more life-saving tech from NASA and the money we've quote-unquote wasted on it. Needing to monitor astronauts' vital signs in space, the Goddard Space Flight Center created monitoring systems that have been adapted to regulate blood sugar levels and release insulin as needed. When you consider all of these things and so many more, Diane, how many lives have been saved because of NASA's quest for knowledge? Again, you can't quantify an answer, but it was worth the expense. Oh, yes, it was.
Absolutely worth the expense, and more monies are coming for us to explore space, whether people like Matthew like it or not. Remember, exploration is part of the human DNA, if you will. We are explorers. We need knowledge. We only grow with knowledge. If you don't increase your knowledge, you become stagnant. And if you become stagnant, that can lead to your downfall.
Yeah, it certainly can, but Matthew wasn't done. He had a comeback to the information I posted and commented, well, it sounds like you're making an argument that spending a ton of money to do exploratory research has in the past provided unintended benefits, and therefore it's justified to continue to spend tremendous amounts of money we don't have on things that have no direct benefit to us. End of quote. Well, maybe think of it this way. How long did Dr. Christian Barnard study how much money was spent on research, developing medications and instruments, and all that went into his endeavor before he performed the very first human heart transplant in 1967? How many taxpayer dollars were spent making that possible? How many items used in that surgery were invented for other purposes before being used for transplanting a human heart? How many other lives could have been saved had that money gone to something else? When the first successful heart transplant in a dog at Stanford University in California took place in 1958, one wonders how many people like Matthew thought that was a waste of money. Here's the deal. Over the past 55 years, heart transplants have become relatively easy to do, but finding donor hearts is still very hard. People needing a heart transplant now have a better option while they're on the waiting for a heart list. It's a heart pump that keeps their blood circulating while they wait. Doctors DeBakey and Noon, heart surgeons, wanted a small pump that could be implanted into the body that would do the job. And where did they go to find such a pump? NASA. The implantable axial rotary heart pump was developed at Johnson Space Center in 2002 from a design used to move fuel through the tanks of the space shuttle. Obviously, money spent on the Webb telescope, just as it always has been with NASA, is money well spent as it increases our knowledge. So why is it that some people just don't want to spend that money? And Diane, I think the answer is clear. The idea of knowledge scares them. The idea that the further we push the boundaries of our knowledge of the universe, the further we look back into space and the further we look back into time, brings us closer to the proof that we are not alone in the universe. It's a very upsetting notion to some people. They just can't come to grips with the mathematical certainty that out of the countless billions of galaxies and the untold trillions of planets in those galaxies, we cannot possibly be alone.
No. And, you know, that question of are we alone has sort of puzzled man for millennia. You know, this is not right. a new issue that's come to the forefront. And people need to understand that that question needs answering. Are we alone needs answering. It's not in our nature as human beings to leave a question unanswered. Because if we can unlock the answer to that question, we might get answers to other questions that we have, that mankind has had. You can't stop knowledge, basically, is what I'm saying. And people like Matthew are trying to stop the quest for knowledge.
Well, eventually, someday, the proof will be in hand. It'll upend the religious order of those who would prefer to remain blissfully ignorant. The idea that the Earth revolved around the Sun, that the world was round, and even Newton's laws of gravity turned the religious world order upside down in their day. But all those and so many more discoveries have been proven to be true. We simply don't know what's out there in the vastness of the universe or how many civilizations have existed out there in the distant past, let alone might exist today, but we do know what the building blocks of basic life look like. And with the Webb telescope, we'll be able to identify those elements around distant stars. It's knowledge. We believe that civilization as we know it today arose on Earth roughly 6,000 years ago, even though we know that the Earth has been here for 4.5 billion years. To be honest, we can't even say for sure that civilization as we know it today was even the first time that civilization arose on our own planet.
True.
Every element in the periodic table, aside from hydrogen, is essentially stardust. And the human body, when you break it down by its elements, is roughly made up of 93% stardust. Think about that. And then consider this. When we point the James Webb telescope into the vastness of the universe to look back in time at galaxies and stars, we are really looking into a mirror at our own elemental reflections. The web of knowledge, indeed.
Yeah, the pictures that have come from this telescope, they're absolutely mind-boggling. And we see in these pictures distant stars, past stars, stars that very well have planets around them. And those planets can probably, if they're the right amount of distance from their sun, if they have water, if there are certain elements on them, there could very well be life as we know it. But it's people like Matthew that don't want us to know it. And it's people like those who believe the Earth is only 6,000 years old that don't want us to know it because it will upset everything. And here I'm talking about the Holy Rollers.
Right.
And what people need to understand in relationship to what the Webb is doing, what NASA is doing. It's great to believe the words of the Bible. If you want to believe the Earth is 6,000 years old, fine, believe it. Nobody's stopping you. And it's great that the Bible teaches moral stories. It teaches right from wrong. It's a good comfort to many, and that's great. But don't let the Bible become your science textbook, because it's not. And advances like the Webb telescope prove more and more every day that it's not. All you have to do is look at the pictures, and it's not, and it shows clearly we are not alone, nor have we probably ever been alone.
You know, just a matter of a few days ago, the Webb telescope got a photo of a galaxy that mm-hmm. is that we're seeing from three. We're seeing how it looked 300 million years after the Big Bang.
Right.
Okay. Now, in cosmic terms, that's the blink of an eye. Mm-hmm. Okay. And that's just after the telescope's been operational. We've been getting photos back for about 2.5 weeks. All right.
Right.
Imagine what they're going to be able to find with this as time goes on. And
it's supposed to run for 10 years.
Yeah. And if it, well, the Hubble was supposed to run for 10 years and it's still going 32 years
and
later.
It's still going. Exactly.
You know, and I mentioned this in the commentary, which, by the way, folks, you can get the Web of Knowledge by going to thenationalpatriot.com. And I hope you do. I hope you grab the link and I hope you share it. But more so to look at the stunning images we've gotten back so far in just a matter of a couple of weeks. And we're getting more back every day. But when you look at these photos, you're looking back in time. The light we're seeing from these distant, distant galaxies is what it was millions, hundreds of millions of years, and in some cases, billions of years ago.
But people can't understand that. A lot of people don't understand that we're actually looking into the past. They have no conception of how that's being done.
I mean, light travels at 186,000 miles per second.
Right.
Okay, so the distance that light will travel in 365 days is called a light year. Okay. And we're looking at light that first shined out from billions of light years ago. I mean, this is like I say, we're looking at stardust, and in looking at stardust, we're looking at ourselves. We're looking at how the universe was created. We're looking at how it expanded. We're looking at, you know, all the different elements that it took to expand the universe. But we're not just looking at distant stars with Webb. We're looking within our own solar system. We've already gotten photos back of Jupiter, you know, from Webb. And we're seeing things in infrared that we had never seen before.
We're looking at Earth's past, folks, and Earth's past goes back further than 6,000 years.
You know, like I say, civilization as we know it started roughly 6,000 years ago, but we don't even know if the civilization that started 6,000 years ago was the first time civilization ever started on Earth. And quite frankly, I'm beginning to question that. Well, yeah, but
that's for a whole other article.
Yeah, it is, but I question the fact that this is the first civilization. Diane, you and I have done more research on these topics than most people will ever do, and there are certain things that lead one to believe that there was at least one civilization before the one that we currently are aware of on this planet.
Right.
So, you know, the fact that we're not alone, but the fact that we're getting knowledge from the Webb telescope, things that will help us understand the physics of the universe. And that means the physics of us.
Right. Right. Because once you understand the universe, you'll also understand the origins of humanity. You'll understand where we came from. You know, as an evolutionist, I'm a strong believer in evolution. We'll be able to see the actual metamorphosis of how man developed. And that's knowledge.
You know, we look at exoplanets.
Some people, yeah, want to stop that knowledge. If we see that knowledge here on Earth, we'll then come to realize that that's happening elsewhere or has already happened elsewhere.
You know, if you find an exoplanet, we have found hundreds of exoplanets,
yes.
Planets in other solar systems, planets in literally other galaxies, okay? But when you analyze the chemical makeup, and we'll be able to do that with the James Webb telescope of these exoplanets, you can discover whether or not a certain exoplanet around a certain star has the building blocks for life. Okay.
Right.
But you have to remember you're looking back in time. So when you look at that exoplanet that might be, let's say, 10,000, 20,000, maybe a million light years away, okay, you're seeing the building blocks of life that existed a million years ago.
Right, and that life has probably evolved by this time.
Exactly. So it helps us learn how these things occur and what the likelihoods are. I mean, it's a phenomenal situation when you get to looking at it. Every day I go look at NASA's website and see if there's any new photos from the Webb telescope. There was today. A cartwheel galaxy photographed.
Yes.
Holy cow.
I know. Amazing.
Stunningly amazing. Beautiful.
And people don't understand also, space itself is beautiful. The Webb has proven the beauty of space. It's not some void of emptiness like a lot of people think. There's activity going on constantly.
Everything's in motion.
Everything.
You know,
and we're part of that motion.
Look at the difference. Go to the nationalpatriot.com. Look at the images. Look at the difference between the Hubble and the Webb.
Okay? Mm-hmm.
And 30 years ago and up to a couple of weeks ago, we were simply astounded by what we got from Hubble.
Yeah.
Now we're seeing things that Hubble never even knew existed. So it makes you wonder, 32 years from now, what in the world are we going to have out there in space to look at the universe, and what will we see then?
You know what one of my favorite images from the Hubble was? The horse.
The Horsehead Nebula. One? Yeah, the Horsehead Nebula. Yeah.
Yep. That's just one of my favorite images because it really brings home that there is other things out there.
You know,
and if you're arrogant enough to think that we're it, this is it in the vastness of space, you really don't understand what the search for knowledge is.
Exactly. And, you know, I could have gone deep into it. I could have gotten very technical. I could have, you know, upchucked a scientific paper. That wasn't the purpose of this commentary. You know, the purpose of the Web of Knowledge was just to let people know how astounding this thing is and what we essentially can learn from it. Was it worth the money? Hell yeah.
Yes. And that it's worth the money. Absolutely. The search for knowledge and truth is always worth the money. As far as I'm concerned.
Folks, go to Diane's blog. Do it now. go to thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com. Grab the link to A Failed Presidency Exposed and Share It Everywhere. Go to my blog, The National Patriot. Grab the link to The Web of Knowledge and share that everywhere. And with that, Diane, we've run out of time.
Okay. Nighty-night, guys.
Good night, everybody. Have a great rest of the week. We'll catch up with you on Friday. Bye-bye.